I wonder if the sun debates dawn some mornings, not wanting to rise out of bed from under that down feather horizon. If the sky grows tired of being everywhere at once, adapting to the mood swings of the weather. If clouds drift off, trying to hold themselves together, make deals with gravity to loiter a little longer. I wonder if rain is scared of falling, if she has trouble letting go, if snowflakes get sick of being perfect all the time, each one trying to be one of a kind. I wonder if stars wish upon themselves before they die, if they need to teach their young how to shine. I wonder if shadows long to just for once feel the sun, if they get lost in the shuffle not knowing where they're from. I wonder if sunrise and sunset respect each other even though they've never met. If storms have regrets, if volcanoes get stressed, if compost believes in life after death. I wonder if breath ever thinks of suicide, if the wind just wants to sit still sometimes and watch the world pass him by, if smoke was born knowing how to rise, if rainbows get shy backstage, not sure if their colors match right. I wonder if lightning needs an alarm clock to know when to crack, if rivers ever stop and think of turning back, if streams meet the wrong sea and their whole lives run off track. I wonder if the snow wants to be black, if the soil thinks she's too dark, if butterflies wanna cover up their marks, if rocks are self-conscious of their weight, if mountains are insecure of their strength. I wonder if waves get discouraged crawling up the sand, only to be pulled back again to where they began, if land feels stepped upon, if sand feels insignificant, if trees need to question their lovers to know where they stand, if branches waver at the crossroads, unsure of which way to grow, if leaves understand they're replaceable and they still dance when the wind blows. I wonder where the moon goes when she is in hiding. I want to find her there and watch the ocean spin from a distance, listen to her stir in her sleep, effort give way to existence.
That's Being Human by Naima Penniman. You're listening to Out There on Valley Free Radio. I'm your host, Ruthie Woodring. Today is Tuesday, September, what is today? Calendar says the 14th. Is that right? Today is Tuesday, September 14th. I'm often confused about the date, but I'm particularly confused about the date today because I've been gone for the last 7 days and another world. I was on a 7-day walk or series of walks, I guess better described. We started in Springfield last Tuesday on the 7th of September and ended up in Boston yesterday on the 13th, Monday. We, being a group of people, mostly women, coordinated by Families for Justice as Healing and the National Council of Incarcerated and Formerly Incarcerated Women and Girls, and we were walking to raise awareness about prison and jail, well, incarceration in Massachusetts, and to support a moratorium bill that would put a five-year moratorium on the construction, design, and construction of jails and prisons in Massachusetts. So it was really great. I just actually got back on the bus this like an hour and a half ago. And I came here in time to do a live show. Because last week was a repeat, honestly. but I haven't had time to edit any of the clips or interviews or recordings from the walk. So I will try and do a lot of that tomorrow. Next Tuesday. So let me play another song while I think about how much more I want to share about the walk while it's still very fresh. How about some Alicia Keys?
She's just a girl and she's on fire. Hotter than a fantasy, lonely like a highway. She's living in a world and it's on fire. Filled with catastrophe, but she knows she can fly away.
This is Out There on Valley Free Radio, WXOJLP 103.3 FM in Northampton. Thanks for listening to Out There. From Out There airs from 3 until 4, followed by Madness Radio at 4, Democracy Now! At 5. So this walk I was on, yeah, there's a lot to say about it. Okay, so here is one moment. So one day in the past week, I think it was Friday, we met at NCI Framingham, the federal prison in Framingham. And I happened to be at the front of the march at that time, holding a banner, sharing the banner holding. A woman named Shawnita had the other end of the banner, and Shawnita's mom was actually locked up at MCI Framingham, has been there for 30 years. Shawnita's mom, Angie, and Angie Jefferson, I believe. And so we were like marching around this prison where her mom is. Shawnita was 33. Her mom has been there since Shawnita was 3 years old. So all Shawnita's life, she's been going to that prison to visit her mom. And I'll play more Shawnita's story next week when I have a chance to edit the clips. But just imagine, you know, the majority of the women are in for drug-related or property-related crimes. Here's another highlight. In Worcester, we marched from the city hall, Worcester City Hall, up to the, I guess it's Worcester County Jail, maybe 6 or 7 miles north up towards, technically it was in West Boylston. And the sheriff and the sheriff's assistant met us en route and when we were stopped for lunch, maybe a couple miles away, and said, you know, the main entrance is closed unless you're, you know, officially visiting someone or you work there. But you can come to another aside entrance where, you know, we'll open it up. You can use the bathrooms. You're welcome to take pictures there, hang out, whatever. They gave us a very friendly welcome. And so we went to the other entrance, and some of the women went inside like the razor wire fence with the locking, double locking doors and stuff, and went and used the bathroom and stuff. Some women who were previously incarcerated, women who had spent years in jail. And when some of us, we just hung out and talked with the sheriff's assistant. And I asked the sheriff's assistant, like, you know, you've been in this field a long time. What do you think is the best way to spend $50 million or however many millions of dollars, or in general, like millions of dollars that the governor has towards building a new prison or, you know, whatever, money in the criminal justice, whatever system? And he was like, drug programs. I mean, everyone, like, so much of it is drug related. Everyone knows that. Here's another interesting statistic that people were saying was that 90-some% of women who are locked up have suffered sexual abuse or domestic violence. All right, let me go to another song. This is Miss Celia's Blues by Quincy Jones.
So shake your shimmy. cause honey, this sun is feeling fine.
Sorry, wrong button. All right, something else, but somehow the online music always tends to repeat if I can't find the right button fast enough. Something else that came to my mind when I was talking about prison issues and stuff was thinking about, well, okay, here's something that struck me on the walk. So I was doing a lot of flyering. That was my specialty, darting out and about and giving out flyers to people as the march was going by. And we got a lot of positive responses. A lot of people, many people recognize this as an unsound investment, prisons and jails. But the negative responses that we got, 100% of the ones that I witnessed were from people that I would judge as being white. And it's just such a reminder, like giving out flyers to people that presented as different races, skin colors, whatever you want to call it. It was pretty striking, like the different reactions you would get based on my judged demographic of people. And it was just such a striking reminder of the segregation that exists in our society, the communities that are impacted by incarceration, the communities that it's like crystal clear that incarceration is ineffective and tearing apart families. Whereas like white middle class, upper class communities, it's like not even on the radar often. Just like the disconnect is pretty intense. Here's something that also I thought of. Sometimes I feel like if I tell someone that I have, maybe I overhear a conversation, someone say, oh yes, I have, my friend is locked up, or my family member or whatever. Usually if it's like a friend, yes. If I tell someone, oh yeah, I'm writing someone who's locked up. Very often white friends will say, what did they do? but I feel like black friends are more likely to say something like, oh, well, how are they? Or something like that. Because that question, it's just a really, that question like, oh, what did they do? That's a really complex question. Because a lot of times what they did was the same thing, or what they got imprisoned for was the same thing that other people with more means and privilege do, but they don't get imprisoned for. So it's somewhat of an irrelevant question often. Anyway, I'm going to play this little clip. This is from early August from A Knee Is Not Enough, an East Hampton-based policing alternative organization, A-Kind.
I'm Natalie Gomez.
I'm Megan Fowler.
And you both part of A-Kind. Did I say that acronym right?
Yes. A Knee Is Not Enough. Yes.
And can you say what is A Knee Is Not Enough?
We're an organization that is looking for change, to say it blandly. We are here to empower, people of color, especially in our community in East Hampton.
A Knee Is Not Enough, or A-Kind, is a BIPOC-led, community-based grassroots organization. We formed after East Hampton Police Department and other public officials kneeled for 8.5 minutes, acknowledging the murder of George Floyd by Minneapolis police, but then took no further action. So the threat of police violence is evident all around us, and we demand that the City of East Hampton and East Hampton Police Department devote at least a portion of their resources to addressing the safety and well-being of BIPOC people in East Hampton and beyond.
Do you want to add anything else? What are you doing now, and how can people be involved or find out more?
So there's many avenues that we can go down. There's lots of things that we're doing in the community. We did our lunch program during the pandemic, where we were bringing food to school-age children. Actually, 0 to 18 was the age. We did it with just volunteers, no city help at all, which is interesting to say the least.
It was food that was already there and available that the city was making, but it wasn't getting to people because of the pandemic. And so we did the coordinating of driving or biking food to people's doors who weren't able to get it otherwise, and it was food that was available and accessible, but the city wasn't handling it very well.
Exactly. One of my big things is just to remind people that you got to get involved in every step of the way, not just presidential elections and big wigs. We were starting in the community, and that means just getting involved, even if it's just small donations or stopping by for events or spreading the word, you know what I mean? That's really important, and we don't want our voices lost, so definitely stay involved.
And I think we've been showing up to city council a lot, like, not just city council, but just our city meetings, so public safety, even school committees, different things, and showing up as sort of a collective voice that is like paying attention and having a conversation around like city, like the happenings of city politics and what that looks like. So yeah, we've done some organized public speaks where we'll work on saying some things that we think need to be heard by public officials and getting them out there. And yeah, I think just staying involved as like also knowing what's going on in the city, because otherwise they just kind of operate without hearing, they're only hearing certain voices. And so
we do a lot of learning events where people can learn how to deal with the city. So we read the budget together with one of our old city councilors, Jen Hayes, where we discussed basically the breakdown of the budget and how to deal with it. Because again, our voice is super important in how our community evolves.
Yeah, and I'd say the city doesn't necessarily make participating easy. And so it's been nice to have a group of people who are all trying to participate from their own space. Participating together.
Absolutely.
That's been really empowering as like somebody, I've never participated in local governments until now. So
same.
It's like nice to have that like community effort where we're doing it together. And like with city budget, it was a good example. We felt like we had to learn about it first, and we can't really impact it until we understand it because it's really complex. And so maybe next year.
Yes. You know, like, right, exactly. Like,
and if you want to find out more, get involved, what's the best way?
We're on Facebook. We are on Instagram at akind01027. We also have our own webpage at akind.org. We have Cash App at $akine, A-K-I-N-E, 2020. We also have a Venmo at akind. Feel free to donate. Feel free to reach out. We are very grateful for any and all help, for sure.
What's the Gmail account? I feel like that's a good way if people want to like specifically.
So it's Anea's Not Enough, AKNEEISNOTENOUGH @gmail.com. Anea's Not Enough. I have to think about that for a second. Yeah, yeah.
All right, sweet. Thanks.
Yes.
Hi, I'm Dean. I am weeding out here in the middle of Northampton. And
sorry, I'm going to interrupt that non sequitur, but not really a non sequitur. So this next interview is with Dean, and it was done in early August 2021 at the Help Yourself Gardens in downtown Northampton.
In the middle of Northampton, and
yeah, we're here with Help Yourself. I stopped to get some peaches on the side of Old South Street. And then Dean walked up to do some weeding. But we're not here to talk about Help Yourself. Well, not too much. Dean told me that he's working on the Decarcerate Western Mass's bail fund project. What is a bail fund project? Also, if you could just explain bail very briefly, because people who have never had any interaction with the criminal justice system may not know how that works.
Yeah. So bail... I'm sure people have heard of bail bondsmen. We don't have those in Massachusetts. Bail bondsmen are people who essentially loan bail money so people can get out of jail. People are put in jail pre-trial. So before they've been convicted of any crime, they sit in jail and they can either post their bail or they cannot if they don't have the money.
Yeah, so if you get picked up by the police and you're in jail and the judge sets your bail, that's like a surety that you will show up in court. So if you, when you then go to court, like if you're released, if you can pay your bail and then you're released, then you get that bail money back when you show up in court. If you can't pay that bail, then you sit in jail until your court date.
Yeah.
Or until Massachusetts or the bail fund people come along like you.
Yeah. Yeah, so we provide, I think our maximum right now is $1,000, so we'll provide $1,000 towards someone's bail. if they can't make that. Sometimes we'll pool together. So if someone has $500 or $1,000, they've got a $2,000 bail, we'll pool our money together to make sure they get out. Yeah, and we, to be honest, we're running out of money. And we're just now starting to get some bails back from early cases that we posted for. So that's also a good sign.
Yeah, if you haven't been to the courtroom, if you sit there and you watch people come before the judge, there's a big difference in coming before the judge dressed in orange and handcuffs versus coming before the judge in a suit and tie, and how you get treated is really different. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And if you're out, you get to keep your job, you get to stay with your family, with your friends, stay in your community.
Prove that you're doing something. Prove that you're, you know, if whatever you're arrested for or convicted of, you know, if that's the situation and you're trying to remediate that, then you can prove that you're actually doing something. Mm-hmm. You have a chance to actually do something.
So
what's your role with the... Wait, no, how can people contribute?
We have a GoFundMe. Let's see. If you follow or look for on social media Decarcerate Western Mass, you should be able to find either on Instagram or Facebook a link to our GoFundMe page that we are fundraising on. We have raised almost $20,000, and I think we just upped our goal to $100,000. So yeah, check it out and donate and spread the word about it.
So Dean, how did you get involved and why is it important to you?
I have been doing abolition work for about a decade. First sort of doing events and fundraising with the Prison Birth Project. I myself was able to bail myself out of a case I had about 5-6 years ago. And if I hadn't been able to do that, I would have lost my jobs. I would have been separated from my community and family for a few years, which is how long my case took. So knowing that, I got really into, yeah, just helping people get out.
So what's your role with the bail fund? What exactly are you doing?
I help people. Oh gosh. I train people to go to the jail and post cash and give people rides. It's kind of a complicated system. It's sort of like the criminal punishment system's MO is just to make things as complicated as possible, which is really hard.
So bail has to be in cash?
Yeah, bail has to be in cash, and you have to bring it to a bail clerk at the jail.
And you got to have $40 on top of that, right?
Yeah, and you have to contribute $40, which is the bail clerk's fee, and they get to keep it as their own money that they earn. And we don't get that money back, that $40 back. But yeah, I also do bailouts myself. I go to the jail and give people rides where they need to go.
What's that like?
It's interesting. Just yesterday, a guy got out. He'd been in for a month, and he was just like, wow, all the trees. I'm just looking at all the trees, and it's so great to be outside of this place and, you know, seeing something green.
Yeah.
And that was cool to hear.
That's cool.
Yeah.
Yeah. I remember once I did some time, and after 3 months, I went to an off-campus program, like as an orderly. I cleaned in bathrooms at the local VA hospital. And I remember when I left campus, just like every blade of grass, I was just like, whoa. And I'd only been there for 3 months. And there was like minimum security where I could go outside anytime I wanted. But still, it was just like, anyway, wow. So how do you all decide who gets bailed out?
Anyone who cannot afford their bail, we bail out. It doesn't matter who they are, what they've been charged with.
But you have limited funds, don't you have to choose?
Yeah, so we choose people who have $1,000 or less in need for bail.
So you've been so with the funds you have, you've been able to meet all those under $1,000 bails. So you're trying to get more funds so you can bail out people who have the higher.
Yeah.
Bails. Okay.
Yeah, we've been doing about, I would say, 2 to 3 bail outs a week at that rate. And you know, sometimes people have $250 bail. They've been in for a month. So Yeah, we're just, we're psyched that we can.
Man, it's expensive to be poor.
Post. Yeah, yeah, it is.
And this is in Ludlow?
Yeah, we're posting in Ludlow, but we're also posting in Hampshire and Franklin, but we've gotten fewer requests from there. It's mostly from Ludlow. Okay. Yeah.
Okay, but you will do Hampshire County or Franklin County if people request.
Yeah.
Okay, awesome.
And you should be able to find our referral form if you know someone who's inside who needs to get out in any of the three counties out here. You can find it on our GoFundMe. You can submit it or hand it over to a lawyer to submit.
And what should people look up for the GoFundMe to find the link?
Decarcerate Western Mass, and you can find Decarcerate on Facebook or Instagram. You can find a link to our GoFundMe there.
That was Dean from Decarcerate Western Mass. You're listening to Out There on Valley Free Radio. I'm your host, Ruthie Woodring. So I want to read an article from Metro West Daily News. Before, I was talking about the women's prison in MCI Framingham and whatever the bill, moratorium bill. The title of the article is Moratorium Bill Could Block Women's Prison in Norfolk as Baker Administration Studies Replacement for MCI Framingham. Administration officials have been studying a potential new correctional facility in Norfolk to replace MCI Framingham. This is from July 22nd, 2021. If you didn't hear the first part of today's show, I just got back from a week-long walk or a series of walks between Springfield and Boston with women who've been incarcerated at MCI Framingham and around the state, and have family members who are incarcerated there and around the state who are calling for decarceration and an end to punishment like this. All right. Recounting. Okay, this article is by, who is it by? Chris Lazinski, State House News Service. Recounting stories of trauma and suffering behind bars, dozens of formerly incarcerated Bay Staters, families of inmates and advocates, dozens of formerly incarcerated Bay Staters, families of inmates and advocates urged lawmakers Tuesday to order a temporary halt on construction of new correctional facilities and redirect resources toward community-based alternatives. Any public agency in Massachusetts would be barred from building a new prison or jail or expanding any existing facility to increase capacity for 5 years under a bill filed by Senator Joe Comerford, S-2030. If approved, the bill could halt the Baker administration's progress toward potential construction of a new women's prison in Norfolk that could cost up to $50 million. Comerford says, Joe Comerford, Florence resident and our state senator, Comerford says, the Commonwealth has no need for extra space. You've heard this today with jails and prisons operating overall at 50 to 60% of their capacity. That's what she told the State Administration and Regulatory Oversight Committee. Instead of borrowing and paying interest up to about $50 million, which is give or take the estimated price tag for a new prison, the Commonwealth should invest in proven and effective community-based alternatives to address the root causes of incarceration. Comerford suggested several alternatives to spending state funds on new correctional facilities, such as investing in organizations that support individuals recently released to help reduce recidivism, creating more affordable housing and food access, and expanding job training. Existing prisons and jails would still be able to perform routine maintenance if the moratorium was implemented, but they would not be able to pursue any repairs or expansions for the purpose of increasing inmate capacity. A Department of Corrections spokesperson declined to comment on Comerford's bill. No final decisions have been made. This article is from July of 2021. No final decisions have been made, but administration officials have been studying a potential new correctional facility in Norfolk to replace MCI Framingham, which is the oldest women's prison of its kind in the country. And has been widely reported to be in poor condition. Yeah, some guy on the street told me a couple of weeks ago, he was like, I heard that thing sinking into the ground. I'm not sure what he meant by that, but he probably knew something. The Division of Capital Asset Management and Maintenance hired a consultant to examine women's corrections in Massachusetts and is finalizing a contract for a feasibility study. That was a lot of words. In February, the State Designer Selection Board selected three firms to submit plans for the potential new prison, Commonwealth Magazine reported. The outlet reported that Jennifer Gaffney, who represented DOC Commissioner Carol Misi at the board meeting, said Misi wants, quote, a facility that is more conducive for the females that we have in our custody to really look at trauma-informed care, end quote. Several speakers at Tuesday's hearing, including National Council for Incarcerated and Formerly Incarcerated Women and Girls Director Andrea James, said they do not believe a so-called, quote, trauma-informed, end quote, prison setting is possible. As the women and girls most directly affected and who've had the experience of living in a prison, we know that a jail or prison will never be a place for a woman or girl to heal or advance her life, said James, who was released from prison in 2011. It's the culture of incarceration that causes further harm and does not change, regardless of the jail or prison. About 70 people signed up to testify about Comerford's proposed moratorium bill, more than some committees draw for entire hearings, with dozens of bills on the agenda. I'm going to interrupt this reading here to say that, so yesterday I was at the State House, this group, with a big group. How many people were there? I don't know, 100, 200, something like that. The State House was closed to visitors because of COVID, I think, so we were out on Beacon Street by the entrance. And Joe Comerford was there and a bunch of other legislators who had helped sponsor or who had worked together on the bill and who were supporting it. And I forgot what I was going to say. I'm going to keep on reading. Many moratorium supporters aim their criticism at the broader criminal justice system, arguing before the committee that building or expanding correctional facilities will reinforce a status quo they believe subjects those convicted of crimes and incarcerated to unnecessary pain. Leslie Creedle told the committee about the fatal shooting of her daughter, Brianna Hardy, in 2017, and the mental, quote, mental torture, end quote, she has endured since then. But Creedle, herself a formerly incarcerated person, said she does not wish prison on her daughter's murderer. I'm here as a mother who wants nothing more than to have that person pay for their sins, to burn in hell, but not rot in a prison cell, because prison's not going to bring my daughter back, Creedle, who leads the Justice for Housing organization, said. I've lived in a prison cell as well, and I know what the DOC does to people who live in their prisons, and it's definitely not rehabilitation. Creedle said the system does not work the way it is. If we don't stop over-policing our communities and locking people up without treatment, this is what you're going to have, more mothers like me, she said. The population of women in Massachusetts prisons, a count that also includes transgender men and women and non-binary individuals, has dropped significantly. Over the past decade, female inmate admissions peaked at 4,409 in 2014, then fell to 2,345 by 2019, and only 358 in 2020, according to DOC data. Comerford said the statewide incarceration rate for women, transgender, and non-binary people is the lowest in the nation in 2021. Michael Cox, policy director for the Boston chapter of criminal abolition advocacy group Black and Pink, said pausing construction and expansion would provide an opportunity for the seeds of the Criminal Justice Reform Act of 2018 to fully ripen and bear fruit. He noted the steep decline in incarcerated women in Massachusetts, adding that officials should expect this trend to continue. Therefore, constructing a new prison is unnecessary, Cox said. Instead, the legislature should consider further depopulation efforts that would be less costly and invest those precious dollars allocated for prison construction into the lives of people struggling and on the margins of our society. Correctional facilities expansions have not been common in recent years. In 2014, the Middlesex Jail and House of Correction in Billerica added 128 cells and a 240-bed dormitory building, while another project that year added a 64-cell housing unit to the Western Mass Regional Women's Correctional Center in Chicopee. That was 2014. I remember that. That's the end of that article. Thanks for listening. You are listening to Out There on Valley Free Radio. I'm your host, Ruthie Woodring. Today's Tuesday. Don't forget about the farmer's market in downtown Northampton behind Thorns. Tomorrow's Wednesday, the Florence Farmers Market, and I'm breathing. And, oh yeah, Saturday is, I'll be at the bike lab this Saturday. I missed last Saturday at the bike lab. I missed the 11th because I was on this walk march journey. But I'll be there this Saturday, the 18th, September 18th, 2021. And September 25th, 2021. But those are the last two Saturdays that I'm going to be at bike lab this season, because then I'm going to Kentucky and maybe to Trinidad after that. Oh, no, there might be bike lab in for a couple Saturdays in November. But you can check the website, the Pedal People website, if you need bike repair help or parts or tools. The bike lab is every Saturday at 12 Northern Avenue, 11:30 a.m. to 2:30 p.m. in Northampton. And you can find more information at pedalpeople.coop/bikelab. And I try to keep my schedule updated. I'm hoping to have the bike lab still happen maybe once a month. Maybe get some volunteers from Bikes for All or some friends or someone to cover at least once a month and post that on the website. So you know somewhere to go to help figure out what's making that random knocking noise, or help you fix a flat, or scavenge used parts, or just borrow the tools, and that kind of thing. All right, time for a song.
Time.
It's the Eurythmics, the Eurythmics, and Aretha Franklin. There was a line in there about a woman still loves a man still loves a woman, or a woman loves a woman, or a man loves a man, or anybody loves whoever, or whoever loves whoever. Anyway, next, here is some, I'll play part of this interview from Help Yourself. Not time for all of it, but I'll play some of it.
It's Friday, August. Does anyone know what the date is today?
13th, Friday the 13th.
Oh, it's Friday the 13th.
Yeah.
2021. I'm here in Frogtown, which is the corner of, I don't know, by the Maplewood Shops, between the Maplewood Shops and Old South Street.
It's on Google Maps.
What, Frogtown?
Yeah.
All right. On the rail trail here. It's one of Help Yourself's territories. 80. What's that?
One of a little over 80.
What? There's over 80?
Yeah.
Wow.
What, so, I didn't know that.
I'm here with Sarah and Maggie. Do you want to introduce yourselves?
Sure. I'm Maggie.
I'm Sarah. There we go.
And what are you doing for Help Yourself? I mean, what are you doing today?
Well, today we are sheet mulching a strip of land here that has been planted with blueberries and aronia in the hopes that we can make a better environment for these small little bushes that are up against some trees and depleted soil.
And they're...
And the exhaust from the cars and the pavement, but they got a tough life.
Yeah, it's hot. It's like they have a pretty small root zone between the path, the paved path, and the parking lot.
Yeah.
What's the sheet mulching going to do? How's it going to improve their environment?
Basically, it's so that the bushes don't have to compete with the roots of the grass. And so by killing off the grass, these bushes can flourish and spread their roots and not have to compete for water and nutrients and space.
Uh-huh. How does it compare to like using the weed whacker or the string trimmer or Roundup?
Oh. Well, I don't know. Roundup seems like obvious. Seems better than that. And yeah, I guess eventually maybe you would plant some, we could plant some like ground covers or maintain like a living mulch around it or polycultures. Yeah. So I feel like it would be more symbiotic than the grass.
Totally. Yeah, you summed it up. And yeah, it's basically so that you don't have to be out here every single week weed whacking it and mowing and doing all sorts of stuff. You can just leave it and let it be.
And watering it too. It helps like keep in some water, moisture.
Yeah, it holds moisture, definitely. And builds soil, which is like what we're all about.
So what's next after the cardboard?
Just what Sarah said, creating a living mulch is exactly it. So doing like putting in ground covers like ground ivy or thyme, stuff like that, that will replace the mulch and create ground cover and be also like medicinal and yummy to eat.
Yeah, so we'll just grab some mulch today. There's some we got from Buy Nothing that we're gonna shovel and use Nina's pickup truck.
like wood chips or bark or something like that.
Yeah, and then we'll just dump a bunch here. And then, I don't know, I guess some, like, ground ivy will probably just come in naturally anyway, and we'll just try to weed around that and support the good ones.
Totally. And thyme seems to be our favorite one here because it can deal with this, like, super depleted and dry soil. So we use that a lot.
How did each of you become involved in Help Yourself?
I was taking the Sumac School, which is a foraging class, a year-long, once-a-month foraging class with Felix, and it was really fun, and I just wanted to learn more, and I like gardening, so, and it's been fun trying different stuff like aronia, and I'm almost seeing my, like, taste buds changing, because I normally don't like bitter stuff or astringent stuff, but I feel like I'm now getting more into like currants or I don't know, like it's kind of cool to even see that I'm liking different stuff now.
Oh, I love that.
Yeah, that is really interesting for me to hear you say, because I've been thinking about that a lot, because you know, I eat so much fresh stuff that I find and it's like it's nothing like it. Mm-hmm. But so many other people I know just they take a bite and they spit it out or something, and I just don't understand. In fact, so I'm a trash hauler. So yesterday I was emptying some downtown trash barrels. Well, this is in Florence. I was emptying these downtown trash barrels. It was like 4:00 in the afternoon. You know, it was like 96 degrees at that time. It's been a really hot day.
And there was these workers, these guys that had been painting a building right downtown Florence. And on the table in the shade next to them, there was a cut watermelon, like half eaten. And so I started to pull, well, I should say watermelon is my favorite thing in the world. Especially on a hot day. Yeah. And so I started to pull one of the garbage bags, and I looked in, and there were like two pieces of watermelon. They were only half eaten. And maybe they dropped them. Maybe that's what happened. But sometimes, like, I'll see people take some, like, natural fruit and then turn around and drink a Gatorade instead or something like that. And I wonder if it is what you say, like, taste buds actually change, and it just doesn't, certain things that don't taste right to us when we're used to natural foods, the natural foods just don't taste right to people used to the artificial foods.
Yeah. I mean, I think it's also, too, right, there's, like, our, like, the normal American diet's, like, very devoid of bitters. Like, there's only, what, chocolate and coffee? Is that, like, it? Can you guys think of any other stuff?
Yeah, or, like, a dandelion. There's something that... some sort of the fancy greens. Not, they're considered fancy.
But, like, who's eating that besides, Endive, like, people at, like, Whole Foods, you know?
Yeah.
Here's Felix. Exactly. Like, there, people aren't, like, tasting the, like, bitter or astringent or anything like that. And so it's, like, new and strange and scary until you start to, like, get to know it. And, But wild foods, as we know, are, like, way more nutrient-rich than, like, any other, even, like, lettuce or anything that you're getting at the grocery store. So...
What about, sometimes people will be like, well, this grew, like, next to a parking lot and a path. Like, what makes you think it's, like, clean or safe to eat?
We do soil tests at all our sites, and we do. And typical of some urban locations, you know, and especially along the rail trail, which used to be a... railroad that had a legacy of creepy use of chemicals, there certainly are some spots that are noticeably contaminated. And we actually haven't planted at those sites yet, until we can figure out how to maybe use bio or, you know, remediation or mushrooms or plants. For your average run-of-the-mill city site, there is some lead, but there's also some lead in just random forest soils. It's just a thing that's out there. And closer to buildings, closer to higher trafficked roads, there's more of it. And so we tend to focus on non-edible greens in those areas of highest heavy metal contamination, because plants typically accumulate those elements in their roots and then their leaves. They are very unlikely or often impossible to get into the flower or the fruit because the plant protects that tissue from those creepy things. The same way that, like, a baby, an embryo, is protected by all these barriers and filters in a, like, pregnant person. So we might grow fruit that we... and choose not to grow, let's say, lettuce or, you know, another typically eaten green or something around it. By having more and more and more and more organic matter in the soil, especially in the upper layers, though there still may be lead in the subsoil, it becomes sort of immobile and doesn't go through living tissues as much. So by building the organic matter of soils, you can reduce the movement of lead through those soils. And just straight up cover it. And in a lot of these cases along the rail trail, there's been a ton, the city did a ton of work to take out contaminated soil and put in fill. So most of the rail trail has 3 feet of, like, fill in some areas, you know, where we're working, that cover those sketchier layers. And
You're listening to an interview with Felix and Maggie and Sarah, I believe, from Help Yourself. This is Out There on Valley Free Radio. I'm your host, Ruthie Woodring. Stay tuned for Madness Radio up at 4, followed by Democracy Now! At 5. And I want to play a little bit of this song, Birmingham Sunday. Tomorrow is September 15th, the anniversary, one anniversary, not sure how many years ago, the bombing of the church in Birmingham, of a black church in Birmingham. And this is Joan Baez. Thanks for listening today.
I saw the sun.
Campaign to register African-American voters was launched during the Civil Rights Movement at the 16th Street Baptist Church in Birmingham by Martin Luther King, Ralph David Abernathy, and Fred Shuttleworth, among others. On September 15th, the church was bombed, killing four girls who were attending Sunday school classes. The fight for the freedom to vote cost them their lives. Don't forget their sacrifice.